Buzz around artificial intelligence is seemingly everywhere. Is your portfolio keeping up? Consider the Global X Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF, ticker AIQ, which invests in dozens of stocks at the leading edge of this disruption. Investing involves risk, including possible loss of principal. Technology companies can be affected by rapid product obsolescence and intense industry competition. Before investing, carefully consider the fund's objectives, risks, charges, expenses, and more in the full or summary prospectus at globalxetfs.com. Read carefully. Distributed by SEI Investments Distribution Co.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. As the war in Ukraine grinds on, we've been watching Russian rockets rain down on Ukrainian cities throughout the year. As of June, the Ukrainian government said six cities had been completely destroyed, including Mariupol. In Kharkiv, the mayor there says nearly 2,500 apartment buildings and approximately 1,000 single-family homes were damaged. Russian forces also struck more than 200 schools, 55 medical buildings, 5 churches, and nearly 50 cultural institutions, including the Kharkiv Art Museum. And that's just in one city. Eventually, though no one can say when, Ukrainian cities will be rebuilt. What will that take? How can it be done? And how will the people of these shattered cities rebuild their lives? Well, to begin to answer that question, we want to look at another modern city that was recently reduced to rubble. What guidance can its people provide? So we look to the Iraqi city of Mosul. In June of 2014, ISIS, or Islamic State, launched an offensive to capture Mosul and Tikrit. On June 29th, ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared a self-styled caliphate from the Grand al-Nuri Mosque of Mosul, a global cultural treasure. 3 years later, ISIS destroyed the almost 900-year-old mosque as the group was defeated in what became known as the Battle of Mosul. From October 2016 to July 2017, the Iraqi military, U.S., and coalition forces fought a grueling battle to liberate Mosul from ISIS. It was the longest, most intense urban warfare anywhere since World War II. 900,000 civilians were forced out of Mosul. Approximately 10,000 were killed, according to an analysis by the AP. A third of those killed by U.S. and coalition bombing. The violence was meted out by ISIS brutality, street-level combat, and coalition airstrikes that laid waste to the city and its surroundings. But Mosul was liberated. And when it was over, Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi came to the ruined city to announce victory over Daesh, as ISIS is called in Arabic. I announce from here to the whole world the end and the failure and the collapse of the terrorist state of falsehood and terrorism which Daesh announced from Mosul 3 years ago. By the sacrifices of Iraqis and their efforts and their blood, we were able to achieve victory over this mean and murderous organization and send it to the trash heap of history, the prime minister said. Well, what was left of the city itself? As Iraqi, Kurdish, and international forces flushed out the last ISIS fighters from Mosul, a reporter described what remained of the historic city by summer of 2017.
It's like something supernatural or otherworldly has hit it.
This destruction, absolutely breathtaking, and really a sign of the dust and bones that ISIS have left in their wake.
Old city Mosul. The damage new, the city gone. Here, the streets are still being ground to rubble.
And it wasn't just the physical structures that were gone. The multi-ethnic society that lived in Mosul and the province of Nineveh was also torn to shreds.
Barely able to see through the blinding dust, West Mosul residents trudged to safety. Three-month-old Meryem was carried out by her uncle. Miserable is how he describes life in the city under siege now for months. God save us from that rotten gang, Abu Hussein tells me, referring to ISIS. Iraqi forces have established what they call safe passages for fleeing civilians. Safe, however, may not be the best way to describe them.
Ali Baroudi is from Mosul. He lived through the ISIS occupation and the battle to retake the city. He's a photojournalist, essayist, and professor of English and translation at the University of Mosul. And he's been documenting the reconstruction of Mosul these past 5 years. He joins us today from Erbil in Iraq. Ali, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me on Point.
And by the way, we have links to his photo galleries and essays at our website, onpointradio.org. Also with us today from Erbil is Maria Rita Acetoso. She's senior project manager for UNESCO's Iraq office and is overseeing the reconstruction of Mosul's historic landmarks, including that world-famous Al-Nuri Mosque. Maria, welcome to you.
Hello. Hello, everyone. Hello.
So, first of all, Ali, I'm wondering if you can just take a moment to redevelop the picture in our minds briefly about what it was like to live through that, you know, almost year of the battle for Mosul. What was it like?
Well, to put it shortly, Mosul was not a city in crisis. It was a big jail. Nobody is allowed to leave. And Mosul turned into an execution field, a public execution field. Executions were something very, very common, and they used to do it almost on a daily basis. It was like living out of time. Everything was forbidden. Life under ISIS was all about do's and don'ts. If you play by their rules, you may survive. If you don't, death is waiting for you. So Mosul was a big jail, lost its identity, multi-ethnic identity. Education was paused and then was forbidden. University study was completely stopped. And basic education turned into an indoctrination for ISIS, extremism, and cruelty. Hmm. So, like, life without education, no civil life, no any sign of civil life. And all of a sudden, neighbors, friends are all expelled out of the city after living there for centuries. Hmm. So, you can imagine that.
Yeah. So the brutality of ISIS was something that the residents of Mosul had to suffer under for several years, right? Because it was, what, 2014, as I said, when they declared the so-called caliphate from there. And that was already just awful enough. And then came the battle to liberate Mosul. When the battle was done, it was approximately, what, 9 months of horrific warfare. Can you describe to us what your city looked like?
Well, when the 0 hour was announced in the middle of October 2016, it was a moment of celebration in Mosul. We all felt that finally we are going to get rid of ISIS. But at the same time, we knew ISIS mentality. ISIS did not appear in June 2014, all of a sudden, out of a bubble. No, we were kind of familiar with their mentality starting from 2005 when Al-Qaeda almost took Mosul twice in late 2004 and early 2005. So we knew that they will not surrender. They are not going to leave the city overnight. So they are suiciders. The suicide mentality of them is to fight up to the last moment. They rarely surrender. So we expected it to be to be something, a huge urban battle. And finally, after 9 months, liberated, but the cost was too high. It was the second longest urban battle in the world, in the recent modern and contemporary history after World War II. So after the liberation, when we looked at the campus, for example, where I work, I did not find the campus that I knew. It was mostly destroyed. Like, the level of destruction reached up to 80% of destruction, and it was not all because of the coalition or the army or the battle. No, ISIS used to treat Mosul as a scorched ground. They used to set fire on every single government facility they leave behind, and that's what happened on my campus. Mm. And after that, when Mosul was fully liberated, I crossed into the old town because I hear that it is a massive destruction. I wanted to witness it myself and see what happened. And what I can say shortly is that as if a tornado went through the old town, as if an 11 Richter scale earthquake. It was not the city I am familiar with. It was full of death, full of destruction. Whole neighborhoods were razed off. The city, cityscape, as we are going to talk about later, the cityscape was deformed, like Mosul is defined by the Leaning Minaret, the Hadba Minaret. And all of a sudden, it was gone. And I was in a state of shock. Mm-hmm. And I was asking this question, as maybe the people of Mariupol or other Ukrainian cities are wondering nowadays, how is it going to rebuild? How are we going to remove this huge mountain of rubble?
Yeah. Well, Ali, can I just step in here for a second? Because you're painting such a heartbreaking, true and vivid picture in my mind. And you had mentioned, you know, the minaret and the mosque. So let me just quickly turn to Maria before we have to take the first break here. Maria, the level of destruction in Mosul has been aptly compared to what happened to Warsaw or Berlin in the Second World War, or even Coventry, Coventry in the UK, which is an interesting comparison because of the destruction of Coventry Cathedral in the Second World War. Can you just take a quick second before we have to take this break, Maria, can you describe in a word or two, how important was the Al-Nuri Mosque, is the Al-Nuri Mosque to the city of Mosul?
Well, I would say that historically is probably, if not the most important religious site, it was one of the most important religious sites in the old city of Mosul, dated back to the 12th century. Mm.
Well, Maria, hold on for a minute. I'm so sorry. I have to cut you off here, getting a little greedy with my time, but we'll just take a quick 1 minute break. And I want to hear a lot more from both of you when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we are talking about the Iraqi city of Mosul. 5 years after the Battle of Mosul really raised the city to the ground. And we're talking about how much a city can be rebuilt. Of course, not just its physical infrastructure, but its people in the years after its destruction. And I'm joined today by Ali Baroudi. He's a photojournalist, essayist, and professor of English and translation at the University of Mosul. And Merida Asitoso joins us as well. She's an architect and senior project manager for UNESCO's Iraq office, working on the reconstruction of historic landmarks in Mosul, including the cultural treasure of the Al-Nuri Mosque complex. And Maria, I'm sorry I had to interrupt you before the break there, but you were describing the, you know, the unique cultural and religious importance of the Al-Nuri Mosque. Can you tell us how much of it was destroyed by ISIS as they were leaving Mosul in 2017?
Well, the destruction was massive. The Al-Khadba Minaret lost completely its shaft, meaning that only the two bases were left. And actually with a partial collapse on one of the sites, whilst the prayer hall was also almost completely destroyed, with only the dome and few pillars around still standing. The amount of rubble was impressive all around the two monuments within the complex. Rubble that had to be, of course, demined. Mm-hmm. And the remains were also severely damaged. So the level of destruction at the beginning was discouraging.
Yeah. And so now here we are 5 years later. And of course, reconstruction couldn't begin immediately after ISIS had withdrawn from Mosul. But how would you describe where the reconstruction of the mosque is now?
Well, we have currently started the actual reconstruction. I would say that we are almost at the 20% of the execution. But of course, to reach this point, a lot had to be done before, because as Ali was mentioning, one of the main challenges when we are talking about the physical reconstruction of the city is the big operation of rubble removal and the mining, which is quite massive in the case of Mosul, because it is extended to the entire old city, basically, with, of course, some areas that had been more affected, like the one along the riverbank. But I would say that this is something that takes a lot of time, a lot of efforts, and a lot of coordination.
Yeah. Well, Ali, as you well know, Mosul should be known worldwide for many reasons, including not just the Al-Nuri Mosque, but you know, its long-standing universities as well. I mean, you're a professor at the University of Mosul, and I'm hoping you can tell us a particular story. And that is, you had mentioned when you first went, you know, into the old town, and you had told us that you thought the destruction was so absolute, there was no way it could be rebuilt. But just around that same time, you heard a particular sound coming from somewhere and saw something that maybe gave you a little bit of hope. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, it was November 2017. The bazaar the historical bazaar was still in ruins. I was there. I was documenting the place, and the question comes to mind: How is this huge mountain of rubble going to move from that place? It was a moment of despair. It was a moment of black and white. It was a moment of of witnessing death and distinct smell of death. And all of a sudden, I heard hammering, like somebody was hammering. And I kept walking and walking and walking, and I found my legs leading me into the blacksmith alley of the old bazaar, I found the owners of the shops, and they were using very simple tools to fix their shops, and they were smiling. They say, well, we are happy that ISIS is gone. We are happy that Mosul is back. We are happy to be part of Iraq again, but we need to start working. And this hammering did not attract me only. This hammering, this noise of life that we have always been familiar with, attracted the international community, attracted the Iraqi government, the local authorities, attracted everybody to come there. I don't want to draw a pinky image of Mosul, like too pinky, but that is what I saw. That's what my bare eyes witnessed. And from that day, look at the bazaar now. Whenever I go there, I just keep remembering that very situation. The old town, which has always been buzzing with life, it fell silent for a couple of months. But it is no longer like that. The result is more important. But unfortunately, the riverside facade, there are still some challenges. The historical riverside facade, which was condensed and densely populated, the most densely populated area of the old town, turned into a heap of rubble. And unfortunately, 5 years into that, it's still like that. There is no solution for that part. Neither from the local authorities nor from Baghdad.
I see.
We keep hearing about the international community and the role of the international community in post-ISIS Mosul. But where is Baghdad? We are part of Iraq, and you know, what they are doing is not fair enough at all.
I see. So just to be clear, that story you just told us was you saw men and young boys using the tools they had to hand to start, you know, digging out, and that was 5 years ago. And now I really take your point about the parts of Mosul that have not been rebuilt or even beginning to be rebuilt. Can you tell me a little bit more about this question you asked about where is Baghdad? Do you feel like there has been a lack of support from the Iraqi government that's hindering Mosul's complete sort of resurrection, if I can put it that way?
You can put it that way. And when I say Baghdad, I'm saying about supporting the displaced people to come back home, supporting the Christians, for example, bringing a completely safe environment and assurances that that Baghdad is still looking at them as Iraqi citizens. When I'm talking about that area of Mosul, I talk about, for example, the Pope Francis' visit when he came to Mosul in March 2021, and we are now 18 months after that. What changed? Like, it's very, very small proportion of change in that very area, the Christian neighborhoods in the old town. You can see ISIS graffitis on those houses up to this moment, as I documented. And like the riverside facade, that's another example of bureaucracy and corruption and lack of support. If you come to Mosul, you will see noise of reconstruction. Yes, that is something nobody can deny. But again, is it enough? ISIS legacy is not restricted to Mosul only. We have Sinjar, we have the IDP camps, maybe scores, if not hundreds of thousands are still there. Thousands of Yazidi girls are still missing. Thousands of Yazidi people are still in the IDP camps, and Sinjar is still in ruins. Mm-hmm. Like, almost nothing changed there.
Yeah. Maria, may I turn back to you? What are your thoughts on what Ali is saying?
Of course, what has been done until now is not enough, because first of all, there is a problem of extension of the damage, which is huge. There is also a practical difference in between public buildings and private buildings, which is not that easy actually to manage in terms of reconstruction, because sometimes, because there is also, as he was saying, sometimes not the willingness of, you know, going ahead with the actual reconstruction, sometimes the owners, they don't want support for the reconstruction of damaged old houses. So it's a little bit complicated. And that's always the case of destruction that happens at the urban scale. Mm. Then there is also the problem of traumatized communities. And for example, he was mentioning the area visited by Pope Francis last year. Actually, we are rebuilding one of the churches located in that area, exactly because we would like to, in a way, bring back the idea of a multicultural and multireligious Mosul, which is the actual spirit of the city that ISIS tried to erase. But of course, the big question is, would that be enough to, in a way, support the return of the Christian community to the old city of Mosul, because they had been severely traumatized.
Yeah.
To put it short, I would say that a lot has been done, but yes, it is not enough. And most probably there should be a more organic approach to the overall reconstruction process.
Mm. You know, Ali, it occurs to me that one possible way of looking at what the process of reconstruction means is that there is much work to be done, right? Obviously physical work, but also civic and cultural work. And that process can, in fact, perhaps reconnect people to the city and their heritage that, you know, the ISIS extremists there had sought to erase. I mean, you talked about what life under ISIS was like beforehand. So it's a really important process, not just for the physical infrastructure of the city, but for the people as well. So I'm wondering, you know, you had of your own accord mentioned Ukraine. What guidance, advice, or thoughts would you share with the people of Ukraine right now, given that you and your city are 5 years into this process of reconstruction and rebirth?
From the statistics we are watching on TV and reading newspapers about Ukraine, the level of destruction is beyond the imagination.
Well, not beyond your imagination, though, Ali.
Well, that brings a lot of memories, a lot of traumas of what we have been through. Wars are wars, whether they are in Iraq or in Ukraine or wherever. They are the same. They leave the same legacy. But as a piece of advice, the first thing that people may imagine is that they will be in a state of shock and depression and hopelessness. But we are humans. We are made to be resilient and to go through wars, survive wars. If you survive the war, then what comes next is much easier than war, because we survived death and now we are alive. I am sure that we can do better, and they, Ukrainians, can do better. The way the resilience that the Ukrainians, whether military or civilians, are showing is beyond imagination. A state of shock, and then with the first hit of spade into the rubble, things will be better. If you don't start by yourself, nobody is going to help you. Mosulis started by themselves, and they found the international community next to them. Mosul has never received this a huge amount of support from the international community before. We haven't seen these organizations like UNESCO and others before ISIS or even during Saddam time. Mosul was always under a blanket of darkness, of blackout, whether under Saddam and the era that followed the US-led invasion. I'm sure there are a lot of good people who are ready to help. You just need to start by yourself once this invasion is over.
Well, Ali, stand by for just a moment, because Maria, the last couple minutes of this segment goes to you. Same question. What thoughts or guidance would you give the Ukrainian people?
To believe that the reconstruction is possible. It is a long process, but it's actually something that needs to start from them, but also that needs to be done in a way by them. Because even in the case of Mosul, what we have been doing was to support the Moslawis to rebuild their own city. And that's a key approach to reconstruction, because in this way, you can use the physical reconstruction to reconnect people with their own cultural identity and with their own city, with their own life, which is something that such horrible conflicts are taking away from people. So that's actually my suggestion, that what I've seen is that whatever we do makes more sense when it is done with the people from Mosul. And that's a critical component, which also has other implications, such as, you know, the fact that the reconstruction can become a source of income, can become an opportunity of skill development, that can make the entire process much more sustainable and much more effective.
Well, Marira Rita Acetoso is an architect and senior project manager for UNESCO's Iraq office. She is overseeing the reconstruction of historic landmarks in Mosul, including the Al-Nuri Mosque complex. Maria, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Ali Baroudi, stand by for just a moment. We're going to talk a lot more about what it will take to rebuild the lives of the people of Mosul when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. And just a note about something we are working on for next week. We're going to be talking about the really broad swath or spectrum of beliefs when it comes to American church-going Christians and their beliefs about their own faith. Because media depictions of Christianity can be extremely narrow, but a fascinating recent survey has found that church-going Americans have really broad differences in their beliefs about Christianity, including a surprising percentage of church-going American Christians who believe that Jesus was a great teacher, but not necessarily divine. Really fascinating. So if you're a regular churchgoer, we want to hear from you. What do you think are the core tenets of Christianity that inform your life? What do you think about who Jesus is, was, And what do you think non-church-going Americans either understand appropriately or misunderstand about your faith? So you can contact us through the On Point Vox Pop app. If it's not on your phone, you can download it at the App Store or on Google Play. Just search for On Point Vox Pop. Or you can also leave us a voicemail at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683. That's for a show on the diversity of beliefs in American Christianity that we're working on for next week. Now, today, we are having quite a fascinating conversation about what it truly takes to rebuild a city and its people. And we wanted to have this conversation after almost a full year of watching Russian rockets rain down on Ukrainian cities. So we're talking about Mosul, Iraq today, which 5 years ago, following the Battle of Mosul, the entire city was essentially laid waste by ISIS itself and by the consequence of U.S. and coalition airstrikes there. Ali Baroudi joins us. He's a photojournalist, essayist, and professor of English and translation at the University of Mosul. And we have links to his photo galleries of his city at onpointradio.org. And joining us now is Sarhang Hamasadi, He's director of Middle East Peace Programs for the U.S. Institute of Peace. And he's with us from Washington. Sarhang, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Meghna. It's great to be back on Point.
So, you know, you heard us talking about the physical infrastructure of a city, of course, but a city is its people. Can you just describe to me where we should begin thinking about, like, how do people's lives get rebuilt or are being rebuilt in Mosul 5 years later?
Right. Yeah. Often after conflict, there's a lot of emphasis on physical reconstruction, but actually the communal rebuilding, the rebuilding of lives, of communities, and the fabric of society is far more important. And it is the kind of rebuilding that is oftentimes is necessary to sustain the gains of rebuilding after conflict. And in the case of Mosul and the broader province of Nineveh, there was complexities that existed that was bringing some tensions to the city and to the province before the rise of ISIS and the violence of the takeover. The practices of ISIS added to that complexity made things worse. So when you rebuild and you rebuild the lives of the individuals and the communities, you are starting for a more difficult place than where the conflict actually started. Mm. And that involves, in the context of Mosul, the diversity that Ali already talked about, where you have Mosul as a city and the province represent the diversity of Iraq, the different ethnic religious mix. They were vying for representation in Iraq's politics and the national level. They were feeling marginalized. So that comes into this picture, as you've heard from Ali already. They've continued to feel that way. And then the ISIS, by design, used tactics to divide the society, to use families and tribes against each other. So as we rebuild, we are, and others are emphasizing programs that connect those people to work through differences and not only physical barriers to return, but communal, social, economic barriers need to be addressed before people can return and rebuild their lives.
Okay, so then tell us in more detail some of the work that you're doing in overcoming those communal barriers in particular, because you're doing quite extensive work in conflict resolution and even conflict prevention amongst leaders in the region.
Right. So to just north and east of the Mosul city, you have the populations of the Christian and Shabak, who are ethnic and religious minorities in the country, where they had some communal tensions before ISIS and then after the liberation. We've done some reconciliation work to enable those communities to reconnect, and because there was tensions over land, over resources, and the coexistence of these communities is based on feeling safe coexisting and trading with each other, going to government offices together. So that required some work that we have done in the west of Mosul, Tal Afar, which is a city that has a mix of Shia Turkomans and Sunni Turkomans. Again, we've done reconciliation work there. Sinjar, which is where the Yazidi minorities live, where ISIS committed the most heinous crimes of genocide and taking a lot of their young girls as sex slaves. The wound is even much deeper there, and it is complicated by the mix of security actors, the PKK, which is the Turkish or the party in Turkey that Turkey fights inside Turkey, and now they have a foothold in Sinjar. You have the Popular Mobilization Forces. Some of its members are considered to be affiliated with Iran. So you have a mix of geopolitics, domestic, state, non-state actors that requires a lot of dialogue. There is breakthrough. There is Iraqi resolve, Maslawi resolve, Sinjari resolve, Tal Afari resolve to work through these issues. But it takes quite a bit of work to do that, and the work is not done.
Okay. So I'm so glad that you mentioned the particular communities, like the Yazidi communities, that were very much ravaged by ISIS in the most awful ways, as you described. I'm just wondering if now that sort of, I mean, historical memory already runs deep amongst any group of people, not just in ISIS, not just in Iraq, but anywhere. I mean, are these more recent crimes and the more recent destruction, does it make it harder to sort of return to a kind of, you know, peaceful coexistence amongst different groups in a multi-ethnic place like Mosul?
Certainly, they make it harder because in Iraq, you have decades and different cycles of conflict and violence bleeding into each other, then creating different sets of justice and accountability issues that have not been addressed over the decades. And they, without resolution, these complicate things. But there is way. The peace building is a process. It's a practical matter. And in our work, we have found that when you have a credible, good analysis and a process where you engage the community, you can find way, break through all that complexity of justice and tensions and wound, and identify people, leaders who would be willing to go to a nonviolent means to resolve their issues, to establish contact. That contact usually leads to identifying common ground as a first step. Before you go to the more deeper justice issues, everybody needs services. Everybody needs water. Everybody needs for their kids to safely go to school. So they identify ways where they can work these through, and then you can go to the deeper issues of justice and accountability. Yeah. And in the case of Nino and Iraq, after ISIS, fascinating that some of the longest traditions have been put aside not to go for revenge and violence, and actually emphasize that they want to resolve their issues through the institutions of the state, through the courts, and through the government.
Yeah. So, Ali, you know, when rebuilding a city, its physical fabric can be rebuilt. Humanity, unfortunately, has such a long history of destroying civilizations that we know that buildings, streets, roads, shops, etc., can be rebuilt. But when it comes to the soul and character of the city, if you don't recapture the lives of people that made the city that city, what have you exactly rebuilt? And let me give you an example that suddenly popped to my mind. What if something horrible, like what happened in Mosul, happened to New York City, for example, just razed to the ground? We could rebuild the buildings. But if we didn't welcome back New York's vibrant, multicultural, multi-ethnic, international, throng of humanity sort of coexisting in this really unique way, would it be New York? I argue it would not. So how important is it for Mosul to get back to a place where it is that sort of shining example of a multi-ethnic Iraq? Would it be Mosul without it?
It would be quite possible for Mosul to be a multi-ethnic pot again. We need to do three things. First of all, let's not forget, like Mosul, like most of Iraq, has been locked down from 1991 to 2003. Mm-hmm. There was no any kind of connection with the outside world, not even through the satellite receiver. And then for Mosul, unfortunately, and the rule of terror and Al-Qaeda and then ISIS, it continued from 2003 to 2017. So now Mosul is more open to the world. The number of ambassadors and presidents and Pope Francis and international organizations coming into Mosul like no time before. I'm 40 years old and I have never ever seen Mosul receiving this amount of foreigners before. Even tourists are flocking into Mosul now. Second, we need to support education. Fortunately, there are five governmental universities in Nineveh. Mosul is the mother founding university in the city. And I can say over 60,000 students come to school on a daily basis. We have students coming from southern Iraq, Shia students, Christian Yazidis. Thousands of them are in the dorms. Second, Mosul University is working on this, on supporting the studies of peace. And fortunately, and this good news happened last week, Mosul has obtained the UNESCO chair for the fight against violent extremism and enhancing the culture of peace. 3 years of studies, conferences, and workshops, working with the students from various backgrounds about that. And third, and most importantly, we need to reduce the circle of violence happening in Iraq. Let's not forget, ISIS is not the only party. Like after ISIS, 2 years after ISIS, what happened in Baghdad? Mm-hmm. Over 800 people were killed for just demanding simple civil rights. ISIS did not do that. Who did that? Mm.
And so then, I mean, help me understand a little bit more about what you're trying to say about what's still needed.
Reduce militarization, depending on one official institution to stabilize the country, to reduce the amount of interventions, for example, from Turkey and Iran. Turkey and Iran are playing inside on the Iraqi soil. Turkey has many military bases in northern Iraq. Even near Mosul, they have a military base in Bashiq. It's about 30 kilometers away from Mosul, a military base. Iran is shelling whenever they want, whenever they feel angry about Kurds, about whoever, they keep shelling. Turkey are doing the same in Sinjar, and even near Mosul. The circle of violence is not restricted to ISIS. ISIS maybe was the main actor. Its legacy is there, but ISIS is not alone. We have a violent manipulations and interventions from many parties.
I see. Okay, so that's what you mean by the circle of violence in and around Iraq. Okay, very important point. Thank you for clarifying that, Ali. So, Sarhang, in the last few minutes that we have, with everything that's been discussed in mind, I would appreciate hearing from you as well on, of course, Iraq and Ukraine, different countries, but human suffering is human suffering. So what guidance, advice, or thoughts would you share with the people of Ukraine as hopefully, you know, one day they are able to rebuild what has been lost?
Well, a few thoughts to share. One, I would start by saying that please believe that there is light at the end of the tunnel, no matter how brutal and destructive conflicts get. Conflicts do end, and hopefully their conflict will end sooner than later. I would say one of the takeaways from Iraq is that the Iraqi security forces emphasizing civilian protection was a huge challenge for the security forces, but a huge win for the country and the security forces, because that's where reconciliation actually began, especially in areas where there were tensions about how people felt about the security forces, and Mosul was one. So that's that helping of the civilians into safety and prioritizing their lives is important. Diversity is a key aspect, I understand, to some parts of Ukraine as well. So engaging the communities, the different communities in rebuilding is key. The conventional sequence of that, okay, fighting stops, then you build physically, and then you go to development. I think that sequence has changed. In Iraq, there was a preparation for the community rebuilding and reconciliation as the military fight was going. So that is something I would say they could benefit from. Yeah. And never forget about the human agency and resilience of people. They will find way. The help of the international community is key. And as the last point on this is that as you rebuild, they offer opportunities. Iraq offered opportunities for more role for women and minorities.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Sarhang Hamasaid at the U.S. Institute for Peace, thank you. And Ali Baroudi at the University of Mosul, thank you. This is On Point.